Donananian. It was an 09 Honda Pilot that came into the shop this week that was a victim of coronavirus. No kidding. It had sat too long. It was 2.5 months in quarantine. The brake rotors had rusted. Gee, where did you hear that before that was going to happen? The Car Doctor. I always tell everybody, listen, every brand is a little different. Talk to the guys that are selling it, and they'll be able to tell you.
Good advice, Ron. Always great listening to you.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, The Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie. You ever watch the TV show Criminal Minds? It's neat. Yeah, it's, you know, it ran for, what, 10 years, 12 years, something like that. Great show. And they always start and end the show or usually with, you know, Confucius says or Romanoff says something famous, right? A famous quote. And as I sat here trying to think of how would I start today's show, I said, you know, I've got to make a statement. And I think the statement is, for the story I'm about to tell you, if you allow somebody to do it, they will show you who they are each and every time. Boris called this week. Don't know Boris, never met Boris. I still don't know what Boris looks like. He could be standing next to me on a subway platform and I wouldn't know it was him because we did all business over the phone. He was buying a used car. He was buying it from the local Subaru dealer. And he was driving out from Brooklyn, New York, which, you know, the lay of the land is Brooklyn, New York is a good, it's an hour's ride out to where he was buying the car from. And we're like in the middle. And he just wanted somebody to evaluate the car. No problem. I worked him into the schedule. We were a little busy and hectic this week, seeing as how it was Memorial Day weekend prior and, you know, 4-day work week and, you know, got to get it done. And he had the dealership bring the car down. And it wasn't a bad car. But listen, I'm always suspect of used cars. You just have to be. You have to be on your guard, you know, just because. It's a used car. You don't know. 2016 Subaru Forester. And I drove the car. And I have to tell you, it was a nice car. It had a lot of electronics. It had adaptive cruise control in it. It had all the bells and whistles. And I thought it was a nice car. You know, you get a feel for cars. You sit in a car and you can tell, good car, bad car, you know, gonna work. No, it's been abused, that kind of thing. You're like the car whisperer after a while. Maybe the car doctor, car whisperer. That'll be the next radio show. And it just seemed like a good car. And I ran through my report, and there really wasn't a lot to say. There was the one thing that stood out that wasn't great about it was the breather hose on the left side of the airbox had been left off at a recent service. Somebody didn't put it back on the way they were supposed to. And the, let's see, there was a little bit of seepage. I found like an oil drop coming off. Gee, where's that coming from? It's coming from the cradle. And I followed it around and around and around. And it was coming off the left side valve cover gasket area, dripping down the frame rail, running down around the middle, and ending up at the oil drain plug. Easy enough to be fooled and think, gee, is that the rear main seal? Is that the oil pan gasket? I don't think so. I'm pretty certain this was valve cover. But the point became it was worth investigating. You're buying a certified pre-owned used car, certified pre-owned, as Subaru says, meaning that it's guaranteed by the factory. I think it had 7-year, 100,000-mile warranty to go based on the first date of service. And, you know, they're just warranting the car. I'm just trying to baseline it. I wrote it all up. You know, it's got some beginnings, the beginnings of an oil leak. It's seepage. I'm seeing drips and drops hanging off the frame rail. It's important to look at. Seeing issues, yeah, the breather hose, okay, get that squared away. And, you know, was a 60,000-mile service done? All legitimate questions. The car had 67,000 miles on it. Where'd the 60 go? I looked at the Carfax, and there was service work done at 53. There was service work done at 64. What happened in the middle? What, we just sort of skipped over that? Listen. And in all fairness to the dealerships, I want you guys to sell cars. I want you to sell every used car you can get your hands on. I want you to sell every new car you can get your hands on. But I want fair deals. Fair is fair. We're all in business to make money. But, you know, we don't want to hurt people. We want to do the right thing. When the car was done, I called up and I spoke to Alex, the sales manager. I said, "Hey, Alex, it's Ron Ananian, da 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 da." I told him the name of the shop. I said, "You know, listen, I looked at this car for you for Boris." I told him what I said. "It's a nice car." I said, "Now, I'm not getting into price. I don't get into price. That's not my thing." I said, "But, you know, you got valve cover." He says, "Thanks, Ron." You know, I explained the whole thing to him. He says, "Thanks, Ron. I really appreciate your honesty." And I told him, I said, "It's a nice car." All right. And maybe that's where I went wrong, because I remember Lou Holtz. Lou Holtz once said in many a football game he was playing, "You never let a sucker get up off the mat until you got him thoroughly beat." And, you know, Alex, when he sensed that I thought it was a good car, I could see his, and hear his tone change in my head. We said goodbye, we hung up, and on we moved. And I was curious now, what sort of reception would Boris get when he went to pick up the car, or, you know, to finalize the deal and say, "Hey, you know, I want to buy this car, but here's what it needs." What ensued over the next 2 days, almost three, was a litany of nonsense over some of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard any car dealership say. "Well, the reason for the oil leak is because such and such a part," which they didn't really name, "was installed upside down, but we turned it right side up, and now the part's installed correctly." "Yeah?" I said to Boris when he called me, I said, "Tell him to name the part. I'd like to know what part installed upside down is going to make a valve cover gasket leak and then magically correct it when it's not installed upside down. Like, are you kidding?" You know, sometimes you think not only should their license for a dealership be pulled, but their license for humanity should be pulled, because it's times are tough. I mean, come on, we don't go for that in any day and age, but now? And it doesn't need a 60,000-mile service because, well, we did that. We changed the air filter, we put air in the tires, and we changed the oil, and we looked it over, as per Subaru said, in order to certify it for pre-owned. And Boris said, "But is that what a 60K is?" "No," in one of our email exchanges, I explained to him. And he said, "What's involved in a 60K? All right, now listen up, because here's what you need to know. This is the important part. Anytime you're buying a used car, 30, 60, or 90,000 miles, and you want to know what's in that service, what would the dealership you're buying it from do in that service if you're buying a Subaru from Subaru or a Chevy from Chevy and Ford from Ford and so on? Simple thing. You can look in the owner's manual. You can have your mechanic tell you, 'Hey, listen, this is what Mitchell or All Data or Identifix or any one of the numerous research, you know, databases say.' But that's not the be-all and end-all. What I told Boris to do was call the dealership. Call the dealership service department and say, 'Hi, my name is Mr. Smith. I have a 2016 Subaru. I need to get it serviced. Can you tell me what's involved in doing a 60,000-mile service?' I said, have them break it down for you. I'm sure they can give you some kind of a phone quote. Maybe they could even email it to you. 'You know, I'm a new customer. I'm thinking about having you guys become my dealership. I just moved to the area. Can you tell me what a 60K is worth?' And Boris wrote back, 'I never thought of that.' He said, 'That's perfect.' Of course, because now you're going to find out what they're all about. Now, for the dealership that says installing the part upside down makes the oil leak, for the dealership that says, 'Hey, an air filter is a 60,000-mile service,' and you want to know the negotiating point against the price of the car, what's a 60K worth? Ask the guy that's going to sell it to you. But don't even let him know what you're doing." And he did. I don't know the outcome yet. I don't know if Boris bought it. You know, his wife was on the phone with us at one point, and she was saying, "Hey, you know what? Maybe we're just going to walk from this." And I said, "I would, because I got to tell you, all you guys in dealerships that are listening, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but right now it's a buyer's market. Everybody's got a lot of used cars. Everybody's got a ton of new cars. And I'd be happy to conduct business and you know, get a reasonable profit and earn my pay and not try to make up for the last 3 months of loss all on one or two or three or 10 customers. Just something to think about. But your takeaway here is, you want to know what the value of a 60K is? You want to know what should be done? And I'm not saying they're always going to be right. Call the dealership. Ask them. See what they say. Yeah, it's in the owner's manual, and yeah, it's in a lot of databases. But if you're negotiating against a price, find out what they're going to charge you for it and ask them, deduct that from the price of the car. I'll take it to my mechanic." Hello and welcome. Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor here. I should point out that we are on Facebook today. Tom has us up on a live stream on Facebook. The wizardry of the man who could get me on the air in the middle of the Sahara Desert with a juice can and a string.
I'm just magic. What can I tell you?
You really are just magic, brother. So we are live on Facebook, and we're going to, well, until they kick us off or we find out we're doing something wrong, we're going to be on Facebook Saturdays, 2 to 4 p.m. East Coast time, from the Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor Facebook page. So if you want to listen to the stream there, you can. You're listening to the show as we feed it up to the satellite, or as Tom feeds it up to the satellite. And I just want to point that out. So let me pull over and take a pause. The phone number is 855-560-9900. We'll be back right after this to kick the garage doors wide open. Don't go away.
For the best in car advice, give Ron a call, 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Let's get over and talk to Al in Maryland. Al, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hi, Ron. Long-time listener. Always enjoy your show.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I need to cry on your shoulder for a bit here.
Yes.
2005 Nissan Sentra. Went to put the oil dipstick back in the engine. The top of the dipstick broke off.
Okay.
And so the dipstick is stuck inside the tube.
Mm.
The plastic is completely gone. So the old trick about trying to drill into the plastic and put a sheet metal screw and pull it out that way, that's not going to work because it's just the metal of the dipstick in there.
Got it.
So I don't know what to do to get that sucker out. The oil dipstick tube doesn't seem to be bolted into the block. It seems to be pressed into the block on that engine.
Yes, it is. It's a press fit.
So I don't know what to do to get that sucker out.
Is there any bit of the dipstick other than just the flat blade left, or is there
no, just the flat blade.
Just the flat blade. I can tell you what we try, because they will break off and they'll leave a little piece on the tube. I'll tell you what
this didn't.
Yeah, I've had this before, and what we've done is we'll spray a little PB blaster down the dipstick hole and let it soak in. It's a two-person operation, so you're going to have to socially distance while you do this 6 feet apart. But, you know, you'll put a little PB blaster down the dipstick tube, give it 5 minutes to work, 10 minutes to work, and then you're going to need some compressed air and take the oil fill cap off with a shop rag and muffle it around the blowgun and, you know, gently pressurize the crankcase. All right.
Okay. I've seen that. They did it from the PCV valve. Take the PCV valve.
Yeah, whatever works to get yourself in there. If it has a PCV port, you want to block that off. You're trying to build some positive pressure in the crankcase.
Right, right.
And you don't want to do it real hard. You don't want to pop a seal out somewhere. In theory, the air should come out of the dipstick tube. But what's going to happen is, and it's like I said, it's a two-man operation, two-person operation. You're going to positive pressure the crankcase, and then somebody's got to catch the dipstick tube when it comes flying up out of the, because it's never going to completely come out. And as soon as you let off the air pressure to try and grab the dipstick, it's going to fall back in, and you're going to get frustrated. Ask me how I know. It's not uncommon.
That, but do you think even with just the blade in there, it might build up enough? Might build up enough pressure to back it out.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm kind of hoping. Now, the only other alternative is there a magnet thin enough that, you know, you could reach down inside and grab it way?
I tried with a magnet, but it's in there hard enough that it won't pull out.
Right. So it's wedged. So that's why I say the PB blaster, being the rust penetrant that it is, and it'll break up all the crud and varnish and whatever's holding it, and then positive pressure should release it and pull it out. Not an uncommon thing. We see it a lot on the Sentras.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
If I have to go for the tube, this one seems to be pressed into the block.
Yep.
Could I get the tube out by hitting PB blaster at the bottom of it and working it with a vice grip?
It's actually, that's exactly how I would start it. What I would tell you, if you can get the swing room, is soak it with some PB and, you know, take your time. Take a day or two or three or four, right? Let it soak its way through.
Yeah.
And then, you know, maybe grab it with a pair of vice grips just enough. And, you know, maybe if you've got some swing to get a small hammer and tap the vice grips up, pulling the tube at the same time. But you've got to, you know, you're going to fight trying to keep it square, so to speak, even at the angle that you're at, because you're going to try and keep it square and then tap, tap, tap. And sometimes little taps, sometimes a tap to the left, a tap to the right, a tap up, a tap down, something to break its monotony and its rhythm, and you'll find that it comes loose.
Yeah.
So very important. I had a PT Cruiser in the shop this week that needed a thermostat, And it was the ugliest thermostat housing I've done in a long time. And the bolts were all rusted. The housing had been leaking. It was a plastic housing. And the bolts were just almost to the point they were disfigured. So I did my due diligence. I shot it with some PB. I sat down. I had a cup of tea. I answered the phone. I did a little paperwork for 15 minutes. I went back and the bolts came right out.
Stuff is good.
Yeah.
Any danger of that thing? It's sitting down about an inch and a half lower, the dipstick in the tube, than it should be. Any danger of trying to start the engine while that thing is in there?
Shouldn't.
It won't hit the crank.
No, it shouldn't. It shouldn't be down that far. It actually, if anything, it fell down to the bottom of the pan and it's sort of just laying there. If it went down that far, which I don't think it did. Obviously I would tell you I wouldn't take long trips with it, but if you had to run it down to a repair shop for an air hose, if that's what you're thinking, to get some positive crankcase pressure built, or maybe you have a house vacuum that has reverse flow on it. I've seen that on older vacuums where you could actually pressurize coming out and try
that. I've got
that
an air compressor. I can try that. I just don't want to blow a seal out.
That's right. You got to go easy. So you got to go easy if you want
to hit it.
Tap it. Just you're trying to shock it and wake it up. And like I said, don't try doing it by yourself. It's too frustrating. Just do it two together.
Yeah, it's only me, but I think I can.
So
put a few rags around it or something to prevent it from falling back in. Or something.
Right.
Yeah, I'll try something.
All right. So
that's thanks
the deal.
A lot, Ron.
You're
always
very welcome.
Good
now.
Advice and many thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome. You stay well down there, Maryland way. Yes, sir. It's amazing the uses you can find for PB. And this little PT Cruiser needed some help. It really did. And I should tell you this story. Maybe we'll save it for later on this hour. But what do you do? Right here, I'll tell you the story real quick, a part of it right now. What do you do? The little old lady customer comes in. It's an 05 PT Cruiser, and her complaint is that the car overheats. And I said, how do you know that? You always ask, how do you know that? Well, the gauge stays normal. It goes up a little bit, but a shot of steam comes out from under the hood. Okay, fair point. I can understand that. That sounds realistic. So she dropped it off. I brought it in. I'm waiting. I don't see any steam. The phone rings. I go to answer the phone. All of a sudden, there's a whoosh, like an air compressor releasing pressure. And it starts to happen on a regular basis every 30 seconds or so. Turns out, high side pressure on the AC, because she said it only happens with the AC on. And I assume this because we're overheating or superheating the radiator from the condenser. And I'm looking for cooling fan operation. The cooling fan never came on. And the system hit high side pressure release. And it popped open the high side pressure dump. And a little shot of Freon right out into the atmosphere. Oh, boy. I'm sure the EPA was thrilled with that car. Some diagnosis later. I'll tell you how I diagnosed it when I come back. But some diagnosis and some repair later. And she had a good working car. But all I can say is that thermostat housing was really ugly. Thank God for PB Blaster. It helped me get the bolts out and finish the repair. Otherwise, I would have had to do it, not exactly the way I wanted. I wanted to put a thermostat in it. I'm Ron Ananey in the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. Or perhaps you're listening live on Facebook. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananey, the Car Doctor. Let's go over to Carol in Wisconsin, 2015 Mazda. Carol, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
My son has a 2015 Mazda CX-5.
Okay.
He's in the military. We flew out to California because he was going to be out of country now for 3 years, drove it back here, and we put it in storage just so we could reduce the insurance on it. But my question is this: what do I need to do to keep it maintained for him while he's gone? Obviously, I'm not going to be driving it all the time, but how often should I take it out and drive it? how should I drive it? Should I do some city time so I'm using the brakes, get on the highway with it? How often and how far do I need to do that?
Well, first of all, you know, I have to say, tell your son thank you for his service. And to you as a mom, we say thank you for your worry because we're sure you have some. As an Army father of a daughter, I feel what you go through. But seriously, we can't say enough about the young men and women in our military today and beyond. So we appreciate his service.
And I appreciate that.
Well, you're very welcome. Drive it normal. Can you get it out of the garage once a week? Is that possible?
Well, that's what I'm trying to, you know, find out is how often do I need to do that. Like I said, we just have storage insurance on it right now. And if I take it out too often, then I have to pay insurance on it. Whereas if I don't take it out as often, it stays in storage. But I know that it's not good to leave a car sit because it needs to keep lubricated. And, you know, you don't want the brakes to melt off once you put it back on the road and stuff like that. So, I don't know what the minimum is of driving time or how often I need to do that to keep it maintained for him.
Is it inside storage, Carol? Is it in a barn or a shed or something? Is it heated?
No, it's not heated. We have it in our garage in the summer.
Okay.
And then in the winter, we take it to someone else's garage who isn't, you know, they have room to just put it there for the winter.
Right. Can you drive it? Could you drive it twice a month? Could you drive it, you know, every other week and still fall in the guidelines of insurance?
Well, technically not, but, just depends on where I'm going and what I'm doing.
Right.
If I'm just going to take a trip through town or something, run it to the grocery store and come back, not a big deal, you know, but...
I'm thinking if we drove it every 2 weeks for a 30-minute activity period, I think would be great. You know, short tripping, starting the car in the driveway is obviously where everybody starts. The problem is starting it and just running it and letting it idle for 20 minutes. It moves the oil around. It lubricates the engine parts. It brings the coolant up to temperature in theory, but it does nothing for the tires, the brakes, the transmission, the suspension.
Yep.
And, you know, cars are like houses. You let them sit empty or you let them sit, you know, dormant, no activity for a period of time. Things happen. Things start to go bump in the night. And, you know, I would tell you to take a car like this. I mean, I sort of have a problem like this myself. I've got, I'm not bragging, just fact, I have three vehicles. I have a little Ford Ranger, a 97 Ranger with 218,000 miles on it. It's the shop beater, as I call it. And to tell you the truth, I think I like that better than anything. I drive that to death. I've got an 04 Suburban I've had forever. It's got 72,000 miles on it because I never go anywhere with it. And I've got this, you know, 2019 Silverado Chevy pickup that's the plow truck. That's the, you know, heavy utility vehicle. It's got a whopping 2,900 miles on it. It's a year and a half old. So you can tell, where do I go, right? I try to drive each vehicle at the very least every 2 weeks. I try to make sure I rotate things around, you know, for a variety of reasons. At least they kind of get a feel. And, you know, even a 15-minute ride would help. But I guess you're sort of limited by the bounds of what insurance says is a legit case or cause. I mean, you know, do they know the mileage on the car? Are they clocking the odometer?
No, they're not. But their thing is if I call them and I tell them that I'm taking it out of storage, then they prorate me for however long I take it out of storage, and they charge me a minimum of a month premium for a one-day use.
Yeah, that seems kind of silly. Yeah, that seems kind of silly.
So you're saying I should drive it, have it actually on the road no less than 15 minutes.
Yeah, because, I mean, listen, there's no, you know, I can't sit here in all good conscience. Let me tell you what you can't do, all right? Maybe that's the way to attack this. I can't say, hey, Carol, drive this car once every 2 months or 3 months. I think that's too long of a span. All right.
Okay.
You know, I think the rotors are going to rust up. I think, you know, perhaps you'll have battery issues. You know, the battery will sulfate and start to discharge. And, you know, over time, it's not doing the car any sort of justice. I think, obviously, I'd avoid driving the car in real bad weather, you know, winter, snow, high salt to remove all the schmutz from the road, schmutz being a technical term. But, I'd like to see the car get out at least once a month, if not every 2 to 3 weeks. And, I don't think you can do that from what you're saying. So then you're faced with, do you just start to drive it? Does this become Carol's car? And then when your son comes back in a year, you make arrangements or, how many cars do you have in the family? Is there somebody that needs to drive a car? Is there a car that you can get rid of? Is that a possibility?
Well, I have a 2016 Mazda CX-5, and my husband has a 2016 Chevy Sebring.
Right.
So it's just the two of us here now. All the kids are grown and gone.
Right.
But I didn't want to leave him sit this in storage out in California for 3 months, and when he gets back, he's probably going to be on the East Coast anyway. So we just thought, bring it here, and that way we can take it out once in a while and drive it.
Yeah.
I think that's what you're doing. I'm not opposed to taking it out every month. I just wasn't sure if it needed to be more than that.
No, if you can get it out, and let's do it like that. You know what? Maybe this is a game of let's see how it works. Try taking it out every 3 weeks. How does the car fit and feel? I've talked to you for all of 6 minutes. We've never met, and I can already tell you're as sharp as a tack. You'll know right from wrong. You'll know how the car feels. Okay. It'll be a matter of is it developing creaks, moans, groans, shakes. And, if you feel like 3 weeks is too long, then you're going to start doing it every 2 weeks. 2 weeks should be more than sufficient, and at least 15, 20 minutes. Let it come up to temperature, charge the battery. If you can do 30 minutes, great. Maybe there's a routine. You drive to the recycling center or, on the way to the mall for whatever reason, wherever we're getting to drive these days, it would make all the difference in the world for it.
Well, I'm thinking my mom lives an hour from here, so that's the car I use when I go see mom once a month.
Perfect. The only problem you're going to have is when she sees it, that she's going to say, oh, my God, that's those cars away. And you'll remind her, and she'll get more upset than you will because that's her grandbaby.
No, because my youngest baby brother was a Marine, too, so she knows all about how all that works.
Right. I get it. But just start driving it. You're going to have to pay the premium and just take the car out of storage. And at least look at it this way. At least it's not sitting in California for 3 months in dry storage and you're paying a storage fee when you don't have to. So maybe that's the maybe that's the philosophy. Better to pay the insurance, drive it a little bit, rotate the gasoline through it. Gasoline loses its pop after 45 days, they say. It starts to lose some of its fizz. So rotating the gasoline through wouldn't be the worst idea in the world. And just stay up on top of the fluids. And I would change the oil every 6 months, regardless of how many miles it's gone. He'll be back in a year. And, two extra oil changes or two oil changes while he's gone, it'll do the car a world of good. He'll be driving it for another 5 years once he's home.
So do you think in the wintertime it's okay to let it sit in storage for 3 months? Or should I still go get it out?
I might forgive you for that. I might tell you can get away with that, but I would set it up. I would, at the very least, if you're doing that, if you can either get it up on jack stands or overinflate the tires, bring the tires up about 10 pounds when you park it. So, they're overinflated. So if they lose air, all right, you're not necessarily going to lose that much air in the 3 months, and either disconnect the battery or put the battery on some form of a trickle charger if it's parked outside, if there's just some way to keep the battery active. 3 months, I'll let it go once. All right, that wouldn't completely offend me.
So it would be like December, January, February is what we did this last year.
And then come March, we're okay. All right?
Yep.
So that works.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much for that. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Carolyn. Again, tell your son thank you for his service. We'll put a flag up for him and keep him in our thoughts. God bless. You're very welcome. I'm Ron Ananey and the Car Doctor. We are back right after this. Welcome back, Ron Ananey and the Car Doctor. Let's get over to David in San Diego, 02 Chevy Silverado. David, welcome to the Car Doctor.
Good. Hello?
Yes, David, can I help you?
Yes, I was telling the other gentleman that I'm having a problem with that Chevy.
Okay.
202 Silverado. It's a 6.0.
Right. What kind of problem?
It's crank, but all it does is backfire real bad.
Okay. Did you buy it that way, or did you get up one day and that's what started happening? Did it die on the road?
No, I bought it that way. The guy, he told me that he overhauled the engine about a year ago.
Okay.
But I had to tow it home from when I got it.
All right.
I only had it about 4 months, three months.
Okay. What sort of diagnosis have you done to it to this point? What sort of tests?
Well, we put the thing on it, but it says no code.
All right. And that's it?
Yeah. But then somebody told me something about the crank sensor.
Right.
So could that be the cause of it?
Sure. Could also be mm-hmm. anything between the headlights and the taillights. So before we start guessing and throwing parts at this, you know, we've got to start to think of, I know you're looking.
I got spark and I got fuel.
I know you have spark and I know you have fuel at this point because it's backfiring. It wouldn't do either if it didn't have one or the other, you know. But, you know, tell me what you have. You know, sometimes you're looking for a silver bullet, David. And I get that, but, you know, tell me what's good. Sometimes it's easier to tell somebody what's good on a vehicle than what's bad. So mm-hmm. you have spark and fuel. Do you have enough fuel? Do you know what fuel pressure is? Did
yes.
you check fuel pressure?
50. I checked it, 50.
50 almost sounds low. I thought the spec on that was 62. Just double check the fuel pressure spec.
I said over 50, you know, between 50 and 60.
Okay.
They checked it already.
All right. So somebody else is working on this then?
Pardon me?
Is somebody else working on this, or are you working
no,
on
no,
this?
No, I had a friend of mine just looked at it.
Okay. So
I have a friend of mine. He just was helping me.
Be very specific about fuel pressure and just ask them to double check it, because those engines, that generation, were very sensitive. 3 pounds would keep that engine from running. If spec is a minimum of 55, it won't start at 54. It's literally that sensitive. So enough about fuel pressure.
Mine is over 55.
Okay. So
it said it's almost 60, he told me. Okay. I called him this morning.
Well, like I said, whatever spec is. If spec is 59 and it's got 60, yes. If spec is 59 and it's 58, it won't start. My point is fuel pressure is critical. All right? Could this be crank sensor? Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you hook up a scan tool and you crank it, do you see cranking RPM displayed on the scan tool?
No, we didn't do it that way. He did it with the engine off, you know, without cranking it.
Okay.
It just says no code.
Well, we're not interested in codes at this point. We're looking for data stream. Try taking a look and see if you get a reading for cranking RPM. If you don't, then you're going to have to do some testing at the crank sensor. But to do that, you're either going to need a lab scope at the highest end, or you're going to need some form of a digital voltmeter to check for power ground. You won't be able to measure signal just using a voltmeter, but at least you'll know if the sensor has power. Now, how do you know if he rebuilt the engine? How do you know the engine is mechanically timed?
Well, this is what I was told, because it was running.
Okay.
He said, and all of a sudden he parked it and he went to start it and it won't start.
That's what I wanted to know. That's why I said, did you get it that way? Tell you what, David, sit tight. Let me pull over, take a pause. When I come back, we'll finish. I'm Ron Anini in the Car Doctor. Don't go away. Welcome back. Ron Anini, the Car Doctor. David, San Diego, you're still there, sir.
Fine, thank you.
Okay. So let's start.
My new bumper?
Yeah, let's start with. Let's,
we got a new bumper.
David?
Thank you.
David, are you there?
Oh, thanks, David.
David.
New bumper? Yesterday.
David?
I had a recall.
Tom, pull his mic down. So David's not listening. So you know what? Part of the show is, if you call in and you're looking for advice, you have to listen. It's a two-way conversation. That's why they call it talk radio. For everybody else that's interested, where my mind was and what I was going to explain to David was very simply that start from the beginning. You've inherited a vehicle from another person that it died. And I guarantee you everything's been changed and fooled around with on this vehicle, and he got frustrated to the point that he couldn't figure it out, so it was easier to sell it and pass it on to the next guy. Enter David. Don't be a David. Do your diagnostic routine. What I was going to explain to him was, start with, show me what you know. What can you prove? Is the engine mechanically timed? Are the cam and the crank lined up? Bring the crank around the top dead center. Pop off the driver's side valve cover, look at the valves, follow it as you crank it through. Does it go through intake, compression, power, exhaust? On top dead center on number one, are the number one cylinder or the rockers in a neutral state so that you know it's mechanically timed? That'll be close enough, all right? You'll be able to tell. That's a good starting point. And then after that, go through and look at the obvious. Are there any wires out of place? Is there anything visually wrong? one of the key things that I see fail on these particular this particular generation Chevy, the Silverados, is the fact that it loses the grounds. There's two grounds on the back of the engine and a ground down under the chassis on the driver's side by the frame rail. Grounds 103, 102, and I believe it's 104 or 106. All right? Losing the two at the back of the engine, or if the one at the back of the engine, G102 on the right side back behind the valve cover above the bell housing bolt, I've had those where they start to break the strands of wire. And if it loses, I've had it down to, I believe there's like 12 strands of wire in the gauge wire that it is. It gets down to the last one. It'll either go into a no start or a crank and a backfire. Any of this sound familiar, David, if you're still listening? And it becomes a real problem and a real headache over one strand of wire. Or eventually, that one strand breaks and the truck is stuck doing just what this does, and you sell it. David, I wish you had heard all that. Till the next time, I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.